another edition of what I call American Exposé. I'm Chris Gerner. It's the 28th, is it? The 28th of September. I'm about that, and most of you aren't either, as the economy continues to slide below the border and overseas. Last night, working on the website, quite a few new entries. The Agenda 21 section has been redesigned. And we see here, dated Friday, September 9th, as far back as that, the Marines have landed in Biloxi, and they call them the Mexican Marines and Dutch Marines as well. And this article is quite revealing because it states, for the first time since the 19th century, Mexican troops landed Friday on U.S. soil, sent from the Mexican Navy ship Arm Papaloapan, anchored near the USS Bataan. The Mexican ship's name means River of Butterflies. Marines from Mexico, Holland, and the U.S. are part of an international Hurricane Katrina cleanup effort, building up on ships about 20 miles offshore in the Gulf of Mexico. Four Canadian ships are on the way. So, how many foreign troops will be in America as this long-standing, continuing direction of cleanup of these disaster-ridden areas, how many troops are going to come in from all sorts of other parts of the globe? And what are they for but to patrol and to keep orderly peace? And once again, are the American citizens being disarmed? I've seen conflicting statements one way or the other, and I've seen that the NRA has worked with a judge to allow people to have their Second Amendment rights in certain parts of this area that's been ridden by the disaster. But what's driven all this to the point where we are now, people? A created crisis, a weather war. If they can be steered, they can be steered away from harm's way. Apparently that's Jim McCaney's direction and drive for having researched this and done this work with the Russians, apparently. And this is what he's been saying. And we have no reason to, or no way to verify where he's coming from, but certainly we've all been listening to him. And it's a very, very big consensus of opinion of experts that aren't being publicized that, yes, they can be steered, they can be maneuvered. And so why wasn't it maneuvered away from harm's way? As the price of gas is skyrocketing, going to skyrocket. And that's very, very obvious in yesterday's paper. As I look here, Hurricane Rita death toll rises. Sacrifice, conserve, fuel, Bush urges. Well, at this day and time, many people cannot conserve fuel. They have to drive to get to work. They have to drive for the children. Now, back to this article, Marines from Mexico, Holland, and the U.S. are part of an international Hurricane Katrina cleanup effort, building up on ships about 20 miles offshore of the Gulf of Mexico. Quote, our president called George Bush, and 3 days later we came here, in quotes, at Oscar Martinez Fratellin, a fleet or admiral rank officer aboard the Papaloapan, a 440-foot long U.S.-built troop landing ship. Vicente Fox is the president of Mexico. Now, keep in mind, Bush and Fox and is it Paul Martin? I forgot who was in charge of Canada. Anyway, the leader of Canada. They've all been working together. It's been disclosed that they have a secret agreement to abolish the borders. Well, that's not a secret agreement by them. That was a plan under GATT, NAFTA, to eliminate the borders. That's why Border 21 was put into place. And originally it was called Border Region 21. I have those official documents here. Then Border 21, now, according to Darren, it's Border 2012. So this is all part of the plan, the big plan, the big UN plan, to have foreign troops patrolling every country in the world. That's the big UN plan, listeners. Foreign troops patrolling every country in the world. No matter where it is, wherever they are, That is the situation in place, and that's what's being driven and directed at this point in time. That's why weather modification is so important to study today, to research, to get the information out, because without that, we don't have an opportunity to increase our numbers, and right now is a perfect opportunity to do so. By the way, if you want to call in, 559-781-3773, 559-781-3773. 559-781-3773. So we see here in the paper yesterday, residents start piecemeal return to New Orleans. No official timeline for French Quarter. Now, having not been there, how do we know what that situation is like down there? And how many people have been lost as a result of what has happened? How many people will disappear and never be heard from again? As apparently, it was a tsunami, and a lot of bodies were carried off into the ocean. Now, it's very, very important to connect the dots to the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or any other hostile use of environmental modification techniques. This will be a permanent entry on the website. It will be at the top of the website. We were very overloaded with doing work last night, the three of us. We got a lot done, but we didn't get this up there. And it comes out of the U.S. State Department. Use of environmental modification techniques for hostile purposes does not play a major role in military planning at the present time. Such techniques might be developed in the future, however, and would pose a threat of serious damage unless action was taken to prohibit their use. In July 1972, the U.S. government renounced the use of climate modification techniques for hostile purposes, even if their development were proved to be feasible in the future. Keep in mind, this is May 18, 1977. Both the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives held hearings beginning in 1972, and the Senate adopted a resolution in 1973 calling for an international agreement, quote, prohibiting the use of any environmental or geophysical modification activity as a weapon of war, end quote. In response to this resolution, the President ordered the Department of Defense to undertake an in-depth review of the military aspects of weather and other environmental modification techniques. The results of this study and a subsequent interagency study led to the U.S. government's decision to seek agreement with the Soviet Union to explore the possibilities of an international agreement. That's laughable. We've been allies with Russia for years. At the leadership at the top, I'm talking about, in my opinion. During the summit meeting in Moscow in July 1974, President Nixon and General Secretary Brezhnev, see, back in 1974, he wasn't President Brezhnev, listeners. It was General Secretary Brezhnev, formally agreed to hold bilateral discussions on how to bring about, quote, the most effective measures possible to overcome the dangers of the use of environmental modification techniques for military purposes, end quote. Three sets of discussions were held in 1974 and 1975. Resulting in an agreement on a common approach and common language. Also, remember, it was 1974 that the Kissinger document, National Security Study Memorandum 200, was put into place. See, this is why I keep saying over and over and over again, no one is immune from what's happening today. Whether you're getting your paycheck from the federal government, whether you're getting paychecks from the Pentagon, whether you're getting a paycheck from the Chinese military establishment. No one is immune. We're all chess players in a game. We are all being maneuvered and manipulated on a constant basis. Everyone all over the globe is being maneuvered into population reduction agendas. The elimination of the population, which we've overrun our carrying capacity, we're told, which is the biggest lie of the century. of the 21st century, of which Agenda 21 is well underway. This is the whole point in the problem, the whole direction in place. It's very obvious to me and to many of you as well. This is the situation. So this continues. In August 1975, the chief representatives of the U.S. and the Soviet delegations to the Conference of the Committee on Disarmament, the CCD, tabled a parallel, identical draft text of a, quote, Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques, end quote. The convention defines environmental modification techniques as changing through the deliberate manipulation of natural processes, the dynamics, composition, or structure of the earth, including its biota, lithosphere, hydrosphere, and atmosphere, or of outer space. That's right, of outer space, people. Changes in weather or climate patterns, in ocean currents, or in the state of the ozone layer or ionosphere, or an upset in the ecological balance of a region, are some of the effects which might result from the use of environmental modification techniques. Oh boy. Intensive negotiations held in the CCD during the spring and summer of 1976 resulted in a modified text and in addition to understandings regarding four of the treaty articles. These were transmitted to the General Assembly for consideration during the fall session. Article 1 sets forth the basic commitment. Quote, each state party to this convention undertakes not to engage in military or any other hostile use of environmental modification techniques having widespread, long-lasting, or severe effects as the means of destruction, damage, or injury to any other state party, end quote. That's a real laughable statement because I don't know of one communist country that does not break treaties. An understanding defines the terms widespread, long-lasting, or severe. Widespread is defined as, quote, encompassing an area on the scale of several hundred square kilometers. Long-lasting is defined as, quote, lasting for a period of months or approximately a season, end quote. And severe is defined as, quote, involving serious or significant disruption or harm to human life, natural and economic resources, or other assets, end quote. With regard to the peaceful uses of environmental modification techniques, the convention provides that the party shall have the right to participate in the fullest possible exchange of scientific and technological information. In addition to the provision for mutual consultation regarding complaints and for resource to the Security Council, the revised draft establishes the framework for a consultative committee of experts, which would meet on an ad hoc basis when so requested by a party, in order to clarify the nature of activities suspected to be in violation of the convention. Responding to the suggestion of many delegations, the revised text incorporates a provision for periodic conferences to review the convention's operation. All very, very interesting. Will be a permanent fixture on AmericanExpose.com. During the 1976 fall session, the UN General Assembly held extensive debate on the draft convention, including several resolutions relating thereto. On December 10th, the General Assembly adopted a resolution by a vote of 96-8 with 30 abstentions, which referred the convention to all member nations for their consideration, signature, and ratification, and requested the UN Secretary General to open the convention for signature. Keep in mind, they mentioned December 10th. December 10th is a very paramount date, as that was the creation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, December 10th, 1948, Eleanor Roosevelt was behind that. A totalitarian closet communist, Eleanor Roosevelt, a real piece of work, as was her husband, as he had foreknowledge that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor, and we apparently lost over 2,000 of our best back on December 7th, 1941. This ongoing direction to kill and slaughter and maim and control and manipulate doesn't stop. The UN Secretary General officiated at the signing ceremony in Geneva on 18 May. The United States joined 33 other nations, there's that number 33, signing the convention. The convention entered into force on 5 October 1978, when the 20th state to sign the convention deposited its instrument of ratification. President Carter transmitted the convention to the Senate on September 22, 1978. The Senate gave its advice and consent to ratification on November 28, 1979, by a vote of 98-0. The President ratified the convention December 13th. Isn't that amazing? 13th, 1979. The convention entered into force for the United States on January 17th, 1980, when the U.S. instrument of ratification was deposited in New York. All this coming from the State Department, listeners. How amazing is that, people? How incredibly amazing is this information? I'm sorry we are so embroiled in directions that most are created for us. You received a receipt dated Tuesday the 27th. The effect of greenhouse gases on the Earth's atmosphere has increased 20% since 1990, a new government index says. The annual greenhouse gas index was released Tuesday by the Climate Monitoring and Diagnostics Laboratory in Boulder, Colorado. Greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide accumulate in the atmosphere as a result of industrial and other processes that can help trap solar heat, somewhat like a greenhouse, resulting in a gradual warming of the Earth's atmosphere. Now, understand, we don't know anything about what HAARP's really doing to the atmosphere. We know it has its effect to heating. We don't really know what the effects of all the spraying has been on our country and other countries. Very incriminating directions that need to be exposed. Meaning very critical people in positions of prominence need to be given the truth serum to the American public and the public of the world at large. But not from the UN building, people. The Earth's average temperature increased about 1 degree Fahrenheit during the 20th century. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change warns that continuing increases could have serious effects on crops, glaciers, the spread of disease, rising sea levels, and other changes. What is the aerial spraying doing to the crops, listeners? What is drought inducement doing to the crops? The spread of disease? How about the spread of disease? What about the creation of diseases? It comes out of areas like Fort Detrick, Maryland, and other parts of the globe, and out of the Soviet Union, and out of communist China. How about the bird flu epidemic that's being proposed and promoted? How about the vaccinations that we don't know hardly anything about at all, but we are a sicker society than we were at the turn of the century? I'm talking about the turn of the 20th century. This goes on to state in its new analysis, the laboratory, a branch of National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, compares the amounts of carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide, and chlorofluorocarbons in the air. Those gases have been sampled for many years. The index was set to a reading of 1 as of 1990, and the lab said it is currently 1.20, indicating an increase of 20%. They have to justify their jobs for creating these directions. I'm talking about those employees at the UN, those employees in the NOAA, all government employees, and many of them are being channeled out into privatization jobs, losing their jobs, and people getting paid at a reduced rate to fulfill these jobs. Quote, the AGGI will serve as a gauge of success or failure of future efforts to curb carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas increases in the atmosphere, both by natural and human-engineered processes, end quote. Isn't that incriminating? Both by natural and human-engineered processes. Meaning we have to stop industry. We have to stop driving our automobiles. The autos are out. The high price of gasoline will continue. The price of gasoline will never decrease to the degree that we think it should be. And as a result of the high price of gasoline, what's going to happen? Food is going to skyrocket. Products are going to skyrocket. Whatever you have to purchase is going to get very, very expensive because of the continuing expense to bring the products to the factories, to the retail outlets where you purchase products and food. This index is expected to be updated in April. Quote, this index provides us with a valuable benchmark for tracking the composition of the atmosphere as we seek to better understand the dynamics of Earth's climate, end quote, said NOAA Administrator Conrad C. Lettenbacher, Jr. There's more to this. It's on our site. Government effect of greenhouse gases rising. Control. Continued control. Bring us to a third world status at any cost. We are in a mess. A created mess. A situation that's being engineered for us and at us. And most of us are starting to understand what's being done. Most of us are becoming very, very suspicious. They just don't know what to do. Here we see dated the same date, September 27th. This is by Reuters from Oslo. Varying heat-trapping gases emitted by power plants and factories could play a big role in fighting global warming, but would be a costly fix needing strong government backing, a UN report said Monday. Naturally, the UN system, everywhere we look, it's there. People just are in denial about it because the major press doesn't connect any dot at all, hardly ever, to the United Nations system. Right there you see a conspiracy in place. There's no conspiracy theory with the media as far as we're concerned. We know the documentation. We have it on our website. And I'm talking about Dennis and Darren and myself. There's no denying the documentation about what's going on. Anyone can do the research themselves to find out that the major press has been lying to us for years, including the Gulf of Tonkin resolution to get us into the Vietnam War. And what was the excuse for going to Iraq? Weapons of mass destruction. Well, why shouldn't they have weapons of mass destruction? We have them, and we've used them. I always think about Hiroshima and Nagasaki at the end of the Second World War to conclude the Japanese portion of the Second World War. They didn't have to drop them on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, two of the most Christian areas of Japan, apparently. They could drop them on Iwo Jima and Okinawa, saving countless thousands of American Marine lives that were war-weary already from the island-hopping that they had to do. And they didn't have to do the island-hopping after the Philippines anyway. Take back the Philippines and Wake Island, and most of our people are recovered. We never had to invade Japan because Japan didn't have a navy to attack anyone any longer. Japan was out of China. Japan was beaten. But the people of Japan never wanted a Second World War. The people of Germany never wanted a Second World War. The people of America don't want a Third World War. But we're in it right now. And so many are in denial about it. I continue with this article. The survey of 100 experts said greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide can be filtered from chimneys of plants burning fossil fuels, then piped and stored in deused mines or oil fields. The gases might also be dissolved in the oceans. Well, that's not going to fit in with the International Maritime Organization from the UN. They're not going to allow that. This article continues by stating the hitch is the cost. Electricity prices could typically rise by 25 to 80% if power plant operators, the most promising users, adopted the technology. According to the report by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, listeners. Back with more. If you want to get involved, 559-781-3773.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech.
And welcome back to the broadcast called American Exposé. It's the 28th of September. Moving along, dated the 26th, from the Oregonian, as debate continues over whether human actions have exacerbated the current hurricane season, one thing can be said for certain, global warming has emerged as one of the most compelling environmental issues of our time. And listeners, we've been talking about this off and on for weeks on end, the global warming scenario, the Kyoto Protocol, the setup scenario from the UN system to further destroy the factory base of this America, the production of this America that we live in today. Here in Oregon, citizens are becoming increasingly concerned about global warming and have been working in myriad ways to take steps, both small and large, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Al Gore's recent visit to Portland to give a multimedia presentation on global warming saw thousands of concerned residents lined up to hear him speak. Oh, really? Portland's contention that it has reduced greenhouse gas emissions in the metropolitan area over the past 15 years has made headlines beyond Oregon, and Oregon is a very progressive Agenda 21 state, listeners. The biggest secret in the world, Agenda 21. With the heartfelt local support and concern over this issue, one would expect that the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality would be doing everything within its power to ensure that the global warming implications of its permitting actions in Oregon are fully considered. But a case study of one recent permitting action shows that quite the opposite is true. Owens Corning chose Gresham as the site for a large new polyesterine installation plant and began building the plant without a permit in violation of the law. The company is proposing to use HCFC-142B, a highly potent greenhouse gas and ozone depleting substance, as the blowing agent at the new plant. Even though alternative next generation production technologies are in wide use throughout Europe, HCFC-142B is so harmful to the atmosphere that the federal government requires it be phased out by 2010, a deadline the company seeks to avoid by getting the new plant up and running before then. Throughout the permit process, which has largely focused on the company's controversial reliance on the environmentally harmful blowing agent, Oregon DEQ has made substantial errors and disregarded public input. In numerous well-attended public meetings and hearings, concerned citizens raised objection after objection to the company's proposal. These concerns have appeared to fall on deaf ears as the agency chugs along toward the conclusion of the public comment period, and that was yesterday at 5 p.m., treating the entire process as a mere formality and its outcome a foregone conclusion. Owens Corning has admitted that its proposed production process is transitional, eventually to be supplanted by a cleaner, greener alternative. Well, there's more to this article. But keep in mind, there's emissions trading that have been going on. What is emissions trading all about, listeners? What is emissions trading? The beat goes on, people. The immeasurable directions of control, totalitarianism, is very, very obvious to any of us that do any kind of research at all. And that is the point of the problem. That is the direction in place. Here we see from the Boston Globe. 35 years ago, Raymond Bradley spent a miserable summer in the Canadian Arctic. This is dated August 25th of this year. There to map glaciers, he was cold and wet. He was cramped, sharing a pup tent with a fellow graduate student. The food, freeze-dried pellets of meat and vegetables, was terrible. After Bradley returned to the University of Colorado, where he was working on a doctorate in geography, his memory shifted. The magic of the Arctic, he says, cast its spell. From that shaky start, Bradley, now a professor of geosciences at the University of Massachusetts and director of its Climate System Research Center, became an internationally recognized paleoclimatologist known for drilling into the sediment beds of frozen Arctic lakes to find in their layers evidence of centuries of climate change. He co-authored studies that, using data from glaciers, tree rings, coral, and historical records, found the late 20th century to be the warmest period in 1,000 years. This research produced the hockey stick graph that became widely used to reflect global warming. He's also one of the three scientists in the political maelstrom. Representative Joe Barton, the Texas Republican who chairs the House Energy Committee, asked the co-authors of the 1998-99 hockey stick studies for a detailed accounting of the data and funding of all their research on climate change. That prompted protests last month, not only from the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the National Academy of Sciences, the individual scientists, but also from Republican Sherwood Bollert of New York, chairman of the House Science Committee, and Democrat Henry Waxman of California, a member of the Energy Committee. In a letter, Bollert blasted an investigation whose, quote, purpose seems to be to intimidate scientists rather than to learn from them, end quote. Meanwhile, Energy Committee spokesman Larry Neal defends the inquiry, quote, we have been hotly advised by critics to shut up and just keep the money coming, end quote. Neal says via email. Quote, Representative Barton believes that public money for public science doesn't fall down like manna from heaven, end quote. For Bradley, 57, who as a boy in Merseyside, England, built weather stations at school. This is the latest twist in an increasingly politicized career that began as an esoteric exploration of natural climate variation. He and three graduate students spent two and a half weeks in the Canadian Arctic in late spring, drilling through 6 feet of ice, 300 feet of water, and almost 40 feet of lake bed to extract sediment from Murray Lake, on Ellesmere Island. Afterward, while he and his wife hiked the Pyrenees of France and Spain, Barton's request arrived at University of Massachusetts. Bradley's short three-page response reviews research on climate change and directs the climate to his resume, papers, and data archives. Quote, "You can't be pushed around for partisan political reasons," end quote, Bradley says. Quote, "Any scientist should be concerned about this. Today it's global warming. Tomorrow it will stem cell research or evolution or God knows what." And there's more to this, listeners. But it's all here on the website. It's here for you to see. That was entitled "Inhospitable Climate" from the Boston Globe. Rita may worsen red tide in South Texas. Monster mold threatens health in the South. Let's get back to the convention, listeners. The Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. It was signed in Geneva, May 18, 1977, entered into force October 5, 1978, ratification by U.S. President December 13, 1979, that was Jimmy Carter, U.S. ratification deposited at New York January 17, 1980. So this convention is very, very remarkable. The states parties to this convention, keep in mind, always the United Nations considers country states. The states parties to this convention, guided by the interest of consolidating peace and wishing to contribute to the cause of halting the arms race and of bringing about general and complete disarmament under strict and effective international control, oh boy, and of saving mankind from the danger of using new means of warfare, determined to continue negotiations with a view to achieving effective progress towards further measures in the field of disarmament, recognizing that that scientific and technical advances may open new possibilities with respect to modification of the environment. Recalling the declaration of the United Nations Conference on the Human Environment adopted at Stockholm on 16 June 1972. Realizing that the use of environmental modification techniques for peaceful purposes could improve the interrelationship of man and nature and contribute to the preservation and improvement of the environment for the benefit of present and future generations. Recognizing, however, that military or any other hostile use of such techniques could have effects extremely harmful to human warfare. I'm sorry, welfare. That is a very pregnant statement. Recognizing, however, that military or any other hostile use of such techniques could have effects extremely harmful to human welfare. Desiring to prohibit effectively military or any other hostile use of environmental modification techniques in order to eliminate the dangers to mankind from such use and affirming their willingness to work towards the achievement of this objective. Desiring also to contribute to the strengthening of trust among nations and to the further improvement of the international situation in accordance with the purposes and principles of the Charter of the United Nations, have agreed as follows. Article 1, number 1, each state party to this convention undertakes not to engage in military or any other hostile use of environmental modification techniques having widespread, long-lasting, or severe effects as the means of destruction, damage, or injury to any other state party. Number 2, each state party to this convention undertakes not to assist, encourage, or induce any state, group of states, or international organization to engage in activities contrary to the provisions of paragraph 1 of this article. We move to Article 2. As used in Article 1, the term environmental modification techniques refers to any technique for changing through the deliberate manipulation of natural processes, the dynamics, composition, or structure of the Earth, including its biota, lithosphere, hydrosphere, and atmosphere, or of outer space. Article 3, 1, the provisions of this convention shall not hinder the use of environmental modification techniques for peaceful purposes, and shall be without prejudice to the generally recognized principles and applicable rules of international law concerning such use. Number 2, the states parties to this convention undertake to facilitate and have the right to participate in the fullest possible exchange of scientific and technological information on the use of environmental modification techniques for peaceful purposes. States parties in a position to do so shall contribute, alone or together with other states or international organizations, to international economic and scientific cooperation in the preservation, improvement, and peaceful utilization of the environment, with due consideration for the needs of the developing areas of the world. That's quite a remarkable statement there, listeners. Let's hear it again. The states parties to this convention undertake to facilitate and have the right to participate in the fullest possible exchange of scientific and technological information on the use of environmental modification techniques for peaceful purposes. I see. States parties in a position to do so shall contribute, alone or together with other states or international organizations, to international economic and scientific cooperation in the preservation, improvement, and peaceful utilization of the environment, with due consideration for the needs of the developing areas of the world. This doesn't make very much sense when there's desires for population reduction. They have to do it in any way they can. It has to be done. According to this initiative for ECHO 92 Earth Charter, the time is pressing. The Club of Rome was founded in 1968. Limits to Growth was written in 1979. Global 2000 was written in 1979, but insufficient progress has been made in population reduction. Given global instabilities, including the Soviet bloc, the need for firm control of world technology, weaponry, and natural resources is now absolutely mandatory. The immediate reduction of world population, according to the mid-1970s recommendation of the Draper Fund, must be immediately affected. The present vast overpopulation, now far beyond the world carrying capacity, cannot be answered by future reductions in the birth rate due to contraception, sterilization, and abortion, but must be met in the present by the reduction of numbers presently existing. This must be done by whatever means necessary. The issue is falsely debated between a political and a cultural approach to population and resources, when in fact faced with stubborn obstruction and day-to-day political expediency, which make most of the leaders of the most populous poor countries unreliable. The issue is compulsory cooperation. Compulsory cooperation is not debatable with 166 nations, most of whose leaders are irresolute, conditioned by localist cultures, and lacking appropriate notions of the New World Order. Debate means delay and forfeiture of our goals and purpose. The UN action against Iraq proves conclusively that resolute action on our part can sway other leaders to go along with the necessary program. The Iraq action proves that the aura of power can be projected and sustained, and that the wave of history is sweeping forward. very, very incriminating information. This gets very lengthy, and I'm going to skip what, well, let's go to what the Worldwide Fund for Nature is saying. The Worldwide Fund for Nature, listeners, what are they saying? An official with the Worldwide Fund for Nature, the WWF, said September 10th that the Geneva UNCED results were absolutely a serious setback. Quote, absolutely a serious setback. There will be no convention on forests by June 1992 for Brazil. The situation has reached a deadlock. This is the first casualty for the UNCED process. UNCED, UN Council for Environmental Development, I believe. Increasingly, UNCED is broken down into blocks, with the developing sector in one block. We heard the statements of Matahar, and these can be serious. We hope that it is just a tactic to precipitate new negotiations, but this potential is set the ball rolling and cause other countries besides Malaysia to withdraw. It is a very difficult situation. A senior advisor on ecological affairs to Britain's Prince Philip said September 15th that Echo 92 organizer Marie Strong had over-politicized the issue of environmentalism and had raised, quote, ridiculously messianic expectations, end quote, for the Earth Summit. Quote, Strong is misfocusing attention away from a clear and present danger confronting the entire ecology movement. The general shift in paradigm toward favoring economic growth in the former communist nations, we should be avoiding too much politicking or politicking. We should concentrate on change of awareness models and attack the underlying ethical, moral considerations that motivate people. Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union, that's our biggest challenge. We will have a major problem if they try to achieve the level of economic growth of the advanced Western nations. This is potentially one of the biggest challenges, and Prince Philip is getting more and more involved in dealing with it. Strong is somebody who spent too much time at his wife's New Age Center. It's obviously touched his mind. It all reminds me of the so-called Millerites of the 19th century, who predicted that the world would come to an end at some point in 1844. So they all went into the mountains to prepare. The world didn't come to an end, and the Millerites became the Jehovah's Witnesses. That is what I see happening to the Earth Summit. Just listen to Strong talk about the most significant event in human history ever, and the last chance to save the planet. What could be more ridiculous and guaranteed to create a mess? We see the backlash already in the reactions of various third world countries. So what must be done in the face of mounting opposition from third world elements? Certain forces in the European, the Eastern European and Russian regions, and by the Vatican, and certain weak-kneed response within the ecology effort, what really is the purpose of traipsing around the Americas and convince a handful of farmers, unionists, local officials, churchmen, and university environmentalists of the necessity of the Earth Charter? If one truly wished to convert the American public, would it not be necessary to say fully, openly, and explicitly what must be done? And that it must be done now. Do you really imagine that parading some third worlders before hearings conducted by local celebrities, the third world will simply quiet down, or that the American press coverage of these events will overwhelm this opposition? Will you take action now that President Bush has the political momentum or wait until you must convince America to fight 100 Vietnam simultaneously? This is the time to give the Anglo-Saxon race in its most glorious production, the Anglo-Saxon system of banking, insurance, and trade. How amazing is this, people? We are the living sponsors of the great Cecil Rhodes will of 1877, in which Rhodes devoted his fortune to, quote, the extension of British rule throughout the world, the colonization by British subjects of the entire continent of Africa, the Holy Land and the Valley of Euphrates, the islands of Cyprus and Canada, the whole of South America, the islands of the Pacific, not hitherto possessed by Great Britain, the whole of the Malay Archipelago, the seabed of China and Japan, the ultimate recovery of the United States of America as an integral part of the British Empire. We stand with Lord Milner's credo. We too are British race patriots. And our patriotism is, quote, the speech, tradition, and principles and the aspirations of the British race, end quote. Do you fear to take this stand at the very last moment when this purpose can be realized? Do you not see that failure now is to be pulled down by the billions of Lilliputians of race who care little or nothing of the Anglo-Saxon system? Therefore, the following policy must be implemented. The Security Council of the UN, led by the Anglo-Saxon major nation powers, will decree that henceforth the Security Council will inform all nations that its sufferance on population has ended, that all nations have quotas for population reduction on a yearly basis, which will be enforced by the Security Council by selective or total embargo of credit, items of trade including food and medicine, or by military force when required. That's it for tonight, listeners. Much covered tonight. More to do tomorrow night. Be back, same time, same station. Support it as it needs it. Good night.